Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First for today. It is January the 23rd, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana, and we have two things to talk about on today's show, as the name of the show is implied. You can get a hold of me on your favorite social media service at the handle Ryan Ballingy, and you can get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. All of our stuff's available on Golf News Net Radio, available through iHeart, TuneIn, etc. Our two stories for today. One, we've got a tournament result to talk about, and that's the unbelievable run Jon Rahm is on, and including the win at the American Express. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some live scheduling drama, thanks to some reporting from the folks at SI, who have probably talked about this more than anybody else, to be honest with you. They cover it more than anybody. So they have more, frankly, resources into live than anybody, but some interesting reporting related to that. But first, let's start by talking about how good Jon Rahm has been. Jon Rahm won yet again, second consecutive PGA Tour start with a win. He won the American Express. He won by one in the end at 27 under par, 261 in the three-course rotation they have. The final round played at the stadium course of PGA West. Winds up coming out one ahead against Davis Thompson, who was a game player, put up a great fight. Had one clang off the flagstick that probably should have gone in for a birdie. It could have set himself up to at least get to a playoff with Jon Rahm. But in the end, Rahm was just too good. He did everything right. Went 16, he made a very easy-looking birdie to set himself up for the 71st hole, the Alcatraz, or the difficult par 3, Island Green, that is somewhat reminiscent, but not exactly reminiscent of what you see at the Players, at Sawgrass, and wound up coming to the final hole, having to hit the green from a fairway bunker to give himself a chance to make sure that he kept the tournament in his hands. Fortunately for him, Davis Thompson had to go first. He went flag hunting, knowing he needed a birdie to make something happen. He wound up going a little deep. Rahm hits the green, leaves it to 8-10 feet, gives himself an easy two-putt for the win. After, by the way, Davis Thompson did the absolute right thing, played for second place. He didn't play for the playoff. He knew that was probably long gone because Rahm could make the birdie putt to win the tournament. But right behind him was Xander Schauffele and Chris Kirk, who were in the house at 25 under. He knew what getting up and down meant to him in terms of money, in terms of points, in terms of what he has access to throughout the course of the season. And he just played a beautiful play from just kind of the mode area to, a foot, foot and a half, made the tap in par, secured second place, and secured a big payday and a lot of points for him. So he moves up a tremendous amount of spots in the FedEx Cup, goes from 71st, which, by the way, this year is now out of the playoffs. Top 70 only get into the playoffs. Now he is 19th, and he's pretty much guaranteed to get into the playoffs at this point because of what he did this week. So very big deal for Davis Thompson. It's going to mean a lot for his career and what he has access to. As we mentioned, Xander Schauffele, who had an albatross in the final round, by the way, and he talked about that, and the PGA Tour kind of peacock that cost him, or was worth to him, about $300,000 worth of prize money because of the shot that went in. And they showed some footage of it going in, and he kind of said, you know, he missed his line, and he was trying to be aggressive, but he was really trying to miss a little bit left, because then it makes an easy up and in, or an easy two-putt for birdie, and instead just went right over the water hazard guarding the green, guarding the pin position, hit the green just right, probably, 5-6 feet away from Doob, and then roll right in the hole for an albatross too. So incredible for him. And that was really what got his round going, because at that point, he had made four consecutive pars, three under par in the round. And then from there, wound up shooting 10 under 62, rocketed up the leaderboard, moved up 13 spots in the final round. Big deal for him. Great outing for Chris Kirk. And there's Taylor Montgomery again, fifth place solo, 24 under total. I know that there are a lot of folks who expect him to win soon, and I think I'm one of them. Depending on how you feel about betting about golf, you may want to put some money on him this week at Torrey, but it doesn't matter. This guy is a great player, and he is figuring out ways to finish in the top 15 and top 5 so often. It's almost like the next Will Zalatoris, a guy who's just that kind of quality of player. But back to Rahm. Rahm has been on an incredible ride going back to the BMW PGA Championship last fall. He's played 7 tournaments, including that one. He has won 4 of them. He's won the last 2. He has finished no worse than tied for 8th in any of them. And that bad finish was in the Hero World Challenge in a 20-player field. Everything else has been inside the top six in his last seven starts. He is 134 under par in that span. And if you look at what he's done in the last two tournaments, it is unbelievable what he has accomplished. He is 54 under par in his last two tournaments. That's beyond crazy. And coming into this week, a lot of the Amex, a lot of people expected him to do well, of course. He won the tournament in the past. There's a reason he's playing it. He supported this tournament over the years, so there's not an acclimation process to this course or courses as part of the rotation. But he also got upset in prior years, last year, when he called this effing putting contest. And he got upset that he wasn't able to win the tournament because it turned into something that maybe he thought didn't suit his game. Well, turns out that wasn't the case. And he joked about it and said, hey, well, this year I won the putting contest. But he did say he doesn't even have his best game this week, which is frightening for a guy that shot 27 under par to say he didn't have his best game and still won the golf tournament. That is an indication of where Rahm is right now. Obviously, the results tell you that. And the market tells you he's someone you're supposed to really like this week at Torrey Pines, which, by the way, that gets underway on Wednesday this week. Very important to underscore that if you're a golf fan. Don't need you showing up to CBS on Sunday wondering what in the world has happened. That's not going to be there. They have moved this tournament. They did it last year. They're going to keep doing it. Farmers moved the tournament from Wednesday to Saturday. And that's for a couple of different reasons. If you wanted to be cynical, it's because the NFC and AFC championship games are on Sunday and nobody's watching anything else. So why would you put golf up against it? That's one way of looking at it. The other is that Farmers is a huge supporter of the Advocates PGA Tour. The Advocates PGA Tour is a tour that's a developmental tour designed for players who are underrepresented historically in the sport to have access to great courses, great events, great sponsors, good purse money. They have that with this tournament. The APGA has a concurrent event that runs on Torrey North and then wraps up over on Sunday. So 36-hole event, and it's just really, really nice to have. So it's an opportunity to spotlight the APGA, get out of the NFL's way, and everything kind of works out. You got a nice field this week. Again, Rahm is the headliner, of course. Justin Thomas is back playing after doing his thing at Kapalua. Zalatoris is part of the field, looking for revenge after losing a playoff last year that never should have happened in the first place. Should have won the tournament, but Luke List wound up winning. You've got Colin Morikawa in the field, who's back after giving away a huge lead on Sunday at Kapalua. He's got some things that he probably wants to make right. And then you've got Xander Schauffele, who's a San Diego kid, went to school at San Diego State for a time. He's a guy that a lot of people are going to like this week after he came back, finished so well in this event at the American Express, and there were a lot of concerns about his back and his back health because of what happened to Kapalua. Well, those seem to have been all assuaged. He said that he's trying to take particular care of his back leading into tournaments right now, where he doesn't want to swing a golf club as much in preparation, just kind of get ready as best he can, and then put all of his energy and effort into swinging the golf club and doing his thing when the lights are on and when everything counts and when everything goes on scorecards. So that seems to have been kind of at least put to bed for a little while, but there are some kind of underlying picks that people are going to like this week. Jason Day is going to be one of those. And I think for good reason, he's got a good course history and it is going to be a good event. Starts on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or on Golf Channel. Friday and Saturday are on CBS and Golf Channel, so you can watch network coverage on Friday. I know lots more people are going into the office these days, but you can stream on your phone, of course, if you need to do that. Also wanted to talk briefly about the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship in the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi at Yas Links. Victor Perez won. It was arguably one of the biggest wins of his career. Great, dramatic finish. 71st hole bunker shot, hole out to get him the title. Survived a pretty crowded leaderboard. It included Minwoo Lee there and Sebastian Soderberg. And then you had 51-year-old Patrick Harrington finishing solo fourth in the tournament. Harrington is, I'm going to say this on every platform I can, he is so impressive at 51 years old. He is hitting the ball as long as he's ever hit it. He wins pretty regularly on the 50-plus tour. He still could keep up with anybody. If you may forget this because Phil Mickelson won the 2021 PGA Championship. He was in the top five in that event at Kiowa. So he could still keep up. He could still bang it out there with the best of them. And he's just someone that's really interesting to watch because he has gone from a guy that wound up winning three majors in 14 months in 2007 and 8, wanted to go chase down the rabbit hole to become a better player, didn't wind up working out for him, but now at 51 years of age, feels like he's figured something out again and maybe could still do something pretty magical. So kudos to him for sticking with it, deciding that he wanted to play against the under 50 set in Abu Dhabi for a $9 million purse on the DP World Tour instead of going and playing 54 holes of golf on the PGA Tour Champions in Hawaii, where he was guaranteed a paycheck but couldn't earn nearly as much. And so he made the right choice, and he still feels competitively fresh, and he can go to the PGA Tour Champions whenever he darn well feels like it. But right now, he's a guy who's willing to try to play against all the best players in the world, not just age-segregated best players in the world. So kudos to him for doing that. Second story for today is LIV-related, and it's because there's some drama, and who doesn't love a little bit of drama, particularly as it relates to your favorite Saudi Arabian-backed league? And that's LIV Golf, of course. So the schedule for LIV is supposed to be 14 events, and that schedule was supposed to have come out last week by all press and all reports of people who have sources within LIV that we were supposed to know the remaining seven events that we don't already know. The first tournament is in a month at Mayakoba, and we know those events, and we know some of the other events that are in like Australia and West Virginia, Greenbrier and Tulsa, Oklahoma, a club, but we don't know half the season. And frankly, I don't know if the players know the finalized schedule yet, because based on the reporting from Sports Illustrated, it sounds like there's a back and forth here about the Saudi backers, who own 93% of LIV, and the people who run LIV day-to-day as the employees of LIV Golf Investments, and what they want to do in terms of a schedule. And it all surrounds whether they're going to have a tournament in Saudi Arabia. And the original discussion among the LIV Golf folks and the players was that the schedule for 2023 would not include an event in Jeddah, in where they're going to play the Saudi International next week. So they're going to be there anyway. It's an Asian Tour event. It's their flagship event on the Asian Tour. Pretty much every LIV guy is going to compete. A bunch of other players are going to compete in the full field event. They're all going to get paid handsomely to show up. They're not just playing for a $5 million purse. And they can go at a time of year when it's not stiflingly hot to be in Saudi Arabia. Well, there was this assumption that with the schedule that they were building for LIV, they wouldn't have to come back there for a couple of different reasons. One, there's no vibe. I mean, if you subjected yourself to that tournament, there was nobody there. I mean, quite literally, almost nobody lives in Jeddah, where they call it Jeddah, King Abdullah Economic City. Almost no one lives there permanently. So it's not like there's a commuter base of people who are just coming out to see golf. There aren't even many people that live there full time. So the vibe stunk. And yes, it was the only tournament that had a presenting sponsor. That's because it was a Saudi Arabian company. But for a tour that is trying to project to the world that they have a fun and vivacious atmosphere that's different than your typical golf tournament, the lack of people and the stone cold silence in Jeddah is not a good contrast. It just doesn't work. So I think the thought here was, hey, we play in Saudi Arabia for the Saudi International. It's a flagship event of a tour. That's all nice and good. We'll do that, and then we won't come back here. We'll do it once a year instead of twice a year if you're a LIV guy. Well, apparently the Saudis came in and said, no, we want you here at least one time during the LIV schedule. We're paying for this, so we want you to be here. And then they had to go start figuring it out. And there had been some thought of having the first LIV tournament be at Saudi Arabia. Players didn't like that because they were already going to be there for the Saudi International, so they didn't want that. And they had also already agreed to something with Mayakoba, which is stealing a PGA Tour stop, and they don't want to mess that up, probably. So they already had that on the books. They've got a good chunk of the schedule already for the months that it would be tolerable to be in Saudi Arabia. You don't want to be there in May, June, July, August, maybe September. It's freaking hot. Why would you want to play golf there? That's not golf season. So the players are going to balk at that. So do you have your season-ending event in September? Because the idea is to try to finish the season in September, or originally was, before the Ryder Cup. Now it sounds like it's going to stretch out a little bit beyond that, maybe into October. do you have Saudi Arabia be your closing event for your team championship? Well, that's a horrible culmination given that you know that not many people are going to attend. The time zone stinks, so people in this country are not going to watch it, even if it's on the CW like it is now. So that doesn't make any sense either. So all of this drama seems to be surrounding the Saudi Arabians who are calling the shots, even though in the lawsuits between the PGA Tour and LIV and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, the whole defense is, well, the Saudi Arabians and the Public Investment Fund really don't have any control over the day-to-day. We handle the day-to-day. But apparently not, because something coming down to a schedule and the finer point of whether you have an event in Saudi Arabia, that is being controlled and being held up, apparently, by the Saudi benefactors. I think the folks at LIV, when they put together an 8-event schedule last year, they went and did it without a whole lot of consideration for there being a need to go to Saudi Arabia. They knew they had a venue. They knew they had that, so they could use it. But what they were trying to do, apparently, in year two is get away from that, go to other venues around the world, use the Saudi Internationals, kind of the Saudi tournament, and not come back to that. And also knowing full well after they've seen the numbers that that is not a sweet spot for watching golf. That was the worst watched tournament along with the one in Asia. So again, very difficult for an American audience. I know they have a global audience and global aspirations, but for a valuable sports market like the United States and the United Kingdom, that's just a non-starter. You're just not going to watch those kinds of tournaments at those time zones. So now they've got to figure it all out. They are expected to apparently release it all this week. I think you're going to see a lot of the same places that hosted in year one here in year two. Probably Centurion Club will do it again. Probably Rich Harvest Farms will do it again. I imagine you're going to see at least two Trump venues. Sounds like there's going to be one at Bedminster. Sounds like there'll be one at Doral. That gets you, what, 4 or 5 tournaments. There's probably going to be one here in the Washington, D.C. area where I live. That's 5. If you're going to have one in Saudi Arabia, that's 6. Now you need one more, wherever that turns out to be. And that could be an Escalante golf property. I don't know, but we'll see, I guess. But it is interesting that they've tried to have so much positive spin recently and try to do a little bit more of a PR influence operation with Norman appearing on Fox News and talking about Tiger Woods not knowing the facts, even though he was talking about Tiger Woods' opinion on things, all kinds of different stuff, and trying to paint the CW deal as a huge win. There's certainly room for interpretation about that. I don't necessarily see it as a huge win. Don't necessarily see it as a huge negative, but I don't know if it's a huge win that Norman's trying to make it out to be. Either way, LIV has to start in a month, and they've got a lot of players, and it sounds like those players have quite a bit of an opinion about where they want this tour to go, because they have been, at least in concept, empowered by Norman to say, this is for you, we are doing this for you, we are creating this so that you can have a say in what's going on, because you, quote-unquote, own the franchises for those 12 players that do, that you are part of a team, that you get part of the spoils, that you know, about them. And they don't want to go to Saudi Arabia and play golf, either when it's untenable or too freaking hot. So they've kind of got this crossroads of a tour that was supposedly about players being told by their benefactors, actually, it's about us because it's our money. And at the end of the day, we want ourselves represented how we want to be represented on the schedule. It'll be interesting to see how it comes out in the wash, but it's worth watching, worth paying attention to as we get closer to that start of the year. Meanwhile, one last thing I want to bring up, and it's sort of related to this because it's schedule related, and I thought this was a really interesting point that Jon Rahm brought up at the American Express, and I wrote about it for golfnewsnet.com, and that is that the idea of the designated event schedule and the player impact program forcing players to play in 17 tournaments, with one exception of the designated schedule, if they're eligible, and then add up to a total of 20 tournaments in their total schedule for the PGA Tour, has actually created opportunities for him to play tournaments he otherwise wouldn't consider. Now, he plays the Amex pretty much every year, but he wasn't considering playing Torrey Pines. Well, he added that, and the reason that he did that is because he could get all of his requirement tournaments out of the way. So he played the CJ Cup, hadn't played that, played that in the fall, played the Amex, that's one he typically plays, and now he's playing Torrey. The rest of the year, his schedule is made because he can play the designated tournaments. He knows what all of them are. He knows when they are, and he knows what he's got to do. And they're ones he doesn't typically play in the past. And he spoke highly of the Travelers and the RBC Heritage as tournaments that he now has to play and, frankly, sees as an opportunity to play. So he's got those. And he's got the Rolex Series events in the fall on the DP World Tour schedule. Because remember, the PGA Tour schedule is going to end in August with the FedEx Cup now. So he won't have to play any tournaments in the fall. That stuff will go away. And the decisions became easier because of the way everything was set up on the schedule. We're about to hit a huge portion of the PGA Tour schedule where there are a lot of designated events in a run. You've got the event in Phoenix, the Waste Management. You've got Tiger's event at Riviera. You've got the Arnold Palmer Invitational. You've got the Players. You've got the WGC Match Play. You've got the Masters. And all of that is coming in the next 8 weeks. And that's six tournaments. So a lot of designated events are about to happen, which means we're going to see a lot of top players frequently in the next 2 months. Great news for golf fans. Hopefully that'll mean more energy about the sport from the fan base, and people want to see what's going on. So schedule things may have been some drama about that on the PGA Tour because of what happened with Liv, but at least from Jon Rahm's perspective, it seems to have simplified things and maybe even made in a weird way a little bit better. That's going to do it for us today on Two at the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. You can always check us out on our website, golfnewsnet.com, our YouTube channel, just search Golf News Net, or on GNN Radio. You can find that on iHeart or TuneIn on our website. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. I will be at the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando, Florida over the next couple of days, so we'll probably be voice-only shows. Might try to do a show from my hotel room on Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, see if we can make that work, but probably going to be voice only. Let's just be realistic. So hope you enjoy the next couple of days. Hopefully we'll talk to you tomorrow. See you on Thursday, and have a great day, everybody. Thanks for watching or listening to Two Off the First.